You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com. And join me on the other line for our first regular season game podcast. I know it's awesome. First racing game is Mr. Tony East, the man of too many titles. I think it's 8.9 seconds co-editor or whatever they're calling it, top dog there. And then West Indianapolis Community News speech writer.
Nailed it.
Only took me, you know, a year.
You figured it out. Adam, there was a regular season basketball game and the Pacers literally looked incredible.
Yeah, and you were at it, right?
We should probably let know you were there. Yes, and the stadium was rocking and pretty full for a Tuesday night. For a Wednesday night Pacers game, which was very exciting to see.
Yeah, I was pretty pumped. Usually the game started like 7:10. I mean, they say 7 o'clock start time, 7:10. But when I turned on the broadcast, it's about 7:08 because I know they turn on at 7. They were introducing all the players on the team, and I thought that was really cool. And fans, you could kind of feel the energy. The Sabonis cheer was kind of nuts, and obviously Oladipo was nuts, but it was an exciting first game in the sense that they looked kind of crap for about 3 minutes and then they fell down and they were fine basically from then on.
Yeah, it was weird because they were like doing okay on D at first, but they couldn't score at all besides Mr. Bobo Beretta himself, who was the leader of the team in scoring by the end of the night.
Turnovering the ball like crazy. I mean, they were
like crazy
throwing it away. It was just, it almost seemed like I won't call it jitters. Maybe jitters is the right word, but just like a overhypeness almost.
It was like 3 minutes. Yeah. No, or jitters is a good word. And it was like 3 minutes of that. And then everyone's kind of like, oh boy. And then the rest of the game, they were amazing.
Yeah, so I think for this podcast, if Tony will go along with it, he was hesitant in our pre-show meeting, which was listed about 5 minutes ago. I think what I want to do, because it's the first game and there's 81 more of these, but is do just extreme overreactions for the first game. So we're each going to do two. We'll do one in each kind of segment, and then we're going to actually end this podcast talking about the Miles Turner extension, which we did not hit on, which we both thought wouldn't happen, so that will be an interesting conversation when we get to it. So do you want me to do my first overreaction or do you want to do a first one?
I want to go first.
All right, you go first.
I think Darren Collison's going to regress this year. Like we all kind of, I mean, we all expected, but that's not true. You talked about it though yourself when you said, you know, that I don't remember if you said him specifically or your point was like the veterans in general, like are bound to slightly have some regression. You know, last year the assist to turnover thing carried him. He had 5 assists, 3 turnovers tonight, which is fine. Not as good as he was last year. He couldn't shoot at all tonight. He only took 1 3 and he missed it. And actually, his only three was at the buzzer of the second quarter. So really, he took no threes in the flow of play. And they're just not getting him as many shots. And I don't know why, but if he's not going to be the same level of floor spacers last year, that's not going to be good.
Yeah, so you should say he scored 0 points. I mean, that's how bad it was tonight. He also didn't shoot well from three in the preseason, and I was not going to overreact then to it.
Yeah, okay, let's say this. He was a -1 in a 28-point win.
Yeah, where the starters kind of ran over the – right? I guess maybe the bench did a little bit. I'm trying to think.
Everybody ran over everybody, and then he was a -1.
Yeah, which is concerning. And I think this is a good overreaction, I think, just because we knew some kind of regression was coming, right? I mean, there's just no way he can have a 46% three-point season again. There's just absolutely – I mean, it just right. – At the age he is and where he is in stage of career, that just didn't seem possible. So we knew there was going to be some regression. I mean, obviously, we didn't expect, you know, the crap stat line he had tonight. I mean, he was just – I thought he was probably the worst Pacer to come in the game, and that included, like, all the bench guys that ended up at the end of the game playing. So there's that for it. But I think this is the right overreaction for now. But I think hopefully, you know, he had games last year where he struggled at times, and then he kind of – found his groove against other teams. I want to give him the benefit that he was going against Conley, who was one of the better point guards when healthy. You know, people forget about that he was like, Conley is, what do you say, what, a top 10 point guard when he was fully healthy 2 seasons ago?
Close to that, yeah.
Yeah, so, and Collison, I mean, at his best, Collison's the 15 to 18 range point guard in the league. So I want to give him that benefit of the doubt for now.
Well, flip side to his offensive struggles, too. The Pacers didn't switch a ton tonight, so DC was on Conley a lot, and Conley struggled 3 for 11, only 11 points. So you got to give him some credit for his defense.
Yes, no, that's fair. I was more talking about Conley and Conley's defensive effort on Baylor kind of stuff.
Oh, you're right.
But I guess with Collison, the biggest concern is if he continues to, you know, play kind of not great, he's probably gonna lose his job. I mean, I could easily see Evans taking over. I think they'd like him on the bench for now. But Joseph would be the one I would say, like, he had a pretty decent game, 5 of 7 for 11 points, and he could easily take Collison's job. I mean, if Collison is just continues to be a negative when all the starters are positives, I could that easily could be a Collison thing.
I think even for Collison too, like, it's not even a, like, he could probably shoot 40%, no problem. I wouldn't even call that regression. I would just call that, like, he can't shoot as well as last year again, but it's not taking any. Like, even in the preseason, he wasn't taking them. And I don't really know why, because he only had, like, one or two that he was faking out of. I just think they're running, like, less sets that end up with him getting an open look.
Well, so I guess I wonder, remember we talked about how was Turner and the other players going to gain shots?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a big problem. Like, they have all these good players. How are they going to distribute shots? Maybe they're all going to come from Collison. Maybe Collison just decided, I'm going to have, I mean, I know he only had five sets today, but everybody had a little bit lower stats than normal because it was such a blowout and everybody got to play. But maybe he's going to decide, you know, I'm going to be 4 points and 7 assists or 8 assists a game with one turnover. That's going to be styling, which for this team, it might fit. The problem is he's not good enough defensively to justify no offensive impact.
Right.
You know, remember, he only took 3 threes a game last year. So it wasn't like he took a ton. He wasn't, you know, shooting 5 to 8 a game, which is like, I think Vic took about 5 a game. So there's that to it. But
can you do a happy overreaction because they won by 28?
I'll do my overreaction now. You want me to do mine?
Yes.
My reaction is Domantas Sabonis is going to win sixth man of the year, 14 points, 15 rebounds.
Oh,
he's going to put up this kind of stat line the rest of the year. They're going to win 55 games, and he's going to be like at least the second vote getting in. It's going to be like this huge big deal that he's their center off their bench, and they're not starting him over Turner.
He was absurdly good tonight. Carried right on from the preseason double-double machine. That's what I was thinking my second one was going to be, so I'll scrap it now. My second overreaction was going to be he'll average a double-double this year.
I like the reaction. I think that's a
reaction, a regular reaction.
Yeah. I mean, what was last year? He was 12 and 7, right? Or 11 and 7, something like that. I think he was 11 and 7. So that's not that hard to get to.
Yeah, he is just killing. And, like, he eats up his own misses, which is an easy way to get some good boards. He had 6 offensive rebounds. The rest of the team only had 7 outside of him. Like, he was just up down there. And the team really put that emphasis on rebounding. Nate talked about that in the postgame presser. So it was crazy to see how good he was playing again.
So what did you think of the Sabonis-Turner pairing and the same time of the moving kind of Thad with the bench unit at times?
Yeah, the Thad with the bench unit was great.
Yeah, it seemed really smart. Like, it worked really, really well, I thought.
It really did, because now that they don't have, like, poor Lance. Now that they don't have, like, not a smart basketball like you guys on the bench, like, Fat actually really fits with those dudes because he understands what they're going to do and things like that. You can tell him and Tyreek's going to work really well. They were warming up together before the game.
I got another question before. We got to get back to Sabonis Turner pairing. But do you think a starting lineup of, let's say, Evans, Joseph, Young, who else played out there? Sabonis. Who was the fifth guy out there with them? Was it?
Kojo?
Kojo, Evans, Young, Sabonis, and then throw out McDermott. How many games does that starting five win on itself? Like, it was just playing on a roster.
30 to 35.
Right. I was thinking 30. I was thinking 25 to 30. So yeah, that's how deep this team is this year. Just to kind of point it out.
Yeah, the Sabonis Turner pairing. I'm taking this from Ben's tweet, Ben Gibson's tweet. I don't actually have this number to know. He said that they had a +40 net rating, but their offensive rating was only 60 and their defensive rating was only 20, which basically means the sample size is way too small to do anything. But I will say that I thought they played pretty well together on defense. I saw Sabonis doing a few good things on defending on the perimeter, defending Jaren Jackson, which is really encouraging for the future outlook of that duo. And obviously Turner had foul trouble in the first quarter, so he played most of his minutes in the second half, but he looked good doing a lot of stuff. He was doing great in the post guarding Marcus Gasol a lot of the time. He even had a beautiful spin move in the post. So they both played really well, both individually and when they were together, which gives me hope for their future together.
Yeah, I like the way he said McMillan set it up by bringing Sabonis in at like the 5-minute mark, I want to say, 5-6 minute mark. It may have been a little less than that. And letting him kind of play almost to basically the 6 minute mark of the other of second quarter. I know Turner foul trouble, so that also why Sabonis got more minutes. But I think it's smart because it's going to get Sabonis almost 30 minutes a game this year, which he clearly is. I mean, he might be better than Thad Young at this. I mean, in terms of just overall impact. I mean, I know Thad's got the. Okay, let's put it this way. I think we have to see it more, but I think Sabonis could at the end of the season we could say be the second or third best player on the team in terms of like he's had that kind of impact on the team. Depending, I mean, Vic's gonna be one, and you know, is any sort of two could be Turner or Evans or Young. But I did like that. I think the Turner looks much improved on his ability to guard on the perimeter. There was a play where I want to say it was Garrett Temple got the ball at the top of the key and he kind of faked the shot. Turner hesitated, but able to recover with his foot, didn't leave the ground, and was able to recover and get back and kind of get back on the spot to basically guard him. And that's where it looks different than last year, where even if he bites on the fake, he's got this agility now from all his yoga and stuff like that to kind of like recover easily. And even if he gets slightly beat, he's got such a long arm, he can get back to the guy and swat him away. So, I mean, he just looks like for all the hype on him needing to get his offensive game up, he literally looked like he improved his defensive game in a significant way. And that's for a guy who's already a defensive player. So, I mean, that could be a sign of something good for this season for him.
He stonewalled Gasol a few times, just like he could not get by him at all, which was so impressive to see. I just enjoy watching him on D anyway. And I think 8 rebounds is really nice, 2-3 on the offensive end. He talked about the emphasis they put on rebounding in the locker room after the game. And then someone said something like, do you feel like Coach McMillan's drill where the other team gets 3 points if you don't get the rebound in the paint helped you? And he goes, well, let's not give McMillan too much credit. Which was funny. But yeah, I think he did play well. The fouling is a thing for him and Sabonis too. They both ended up with 3. And that's what I thought kept Sabonis from playing as much as him last year was the fouls. So it'll be interesting to see how the tandem works this year and how many minutes it gets. But I thought night number one, very encouraging for both guys.
Yeah, I thought Turner, in hindsight after one game, has made sort of a Gobert move. Instead of trying to be like this ultimate offensive stretch center, he's going to be more of a defensive stalwart with the ability to, because he's such a threat from three and kind of has a unique offensive game, to be enough of a threat to be on the court kind of thing.
Right. I agree.
I mean, that's what I kind of got from the first game, but we'll sort of see where that leads from here. I will say that Turner was super encouraging.
One more thing about the duo is I'm not sure they planned on playing them more than maybe like one stint before Leaf went down with the injury.
Oh, true. I guess we should mention that before we take our first break, is that Leaf's injury, I guess, I don't know how it's going to impact the team going forward because I don't think he played that much, but it seems like how severe do you think it is? What was the talk in the locker room? Sorry.
No one really asked about it, but it was a sprained ankle and he was questionable to return in this game. So I'm skeptical it keeps him out for more than maybe the weekend.
Yeah, I was thinking, I mean, because he got up and walked off, obviously we'll find out probably more tomorrow.
Right.
Or today, listening to this podcast, obviously on Thursday. I was thinking like a week max, like kind of thing where you're maybe a little cautious, whatever, and you give him this weekend off and maybe a game next week, early next week.
That was like his first offensive possession. That sucks.
Yeah, that really sucks. I mean, just because he played someone in the preseason, it looked like he had like a chance to sort of earn a way into the rotation, and and the team in 5 games, this team might be settled in their rotations already. I mean, they play as well as they play tonight. Who knows?
You want to do a break and then do more overreactions?
Yeah, let's do a quick break. Today's podcast is brought to you by Blue Chew. Blue Chew is the first chewable FDA approved with active ingredients of Vialis and Cialis. As you know, they work. You can take it anytime or any night or even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill. You can be ready whenever opportunity arises. Blue Chew is a prescribed online ship straight to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor visit, no waiting at the pharmacy, and best of all, no awkwardness.
Yeah, you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed that you used to have before. It's BlueChew.com. That's the color blue. It's spelled exactly like it sounds. They're made in the USA, and since they ship direct, they're cheaper than from a pharmacy. So they're really perfect for anyone who might need them. And right now, we on Locked On Pacers have a special deal for all you listeners. If you go to BlueChew.com, you can get your first shipment free if you use this promo code. This is so simple. The promo code is code, CODE. So all you have to do is pay your $5 shipping on it, and you'll get a first order free with the promo code CODE. Again, that's bluechew.com, BLUECHEW.com, promo code CODE to try it for free. So it's the cheaper, better, and faster choice. We thank them for sponsoring the podcast. Go check them out.
Yeah, go check them out. Welcome back in to Locked On Pacers podcast. As Tony and I said, we are doing our overreaction to the first game of the Pacers 111-83 win over the Memphis Grizzlies. After this segment, we'll talk about Miles Turner's contract. I know Locked On Pacer fans are clamoring for Tony and I's take on that. I'm willing to give a hot I'm gonna give a hot take on the Miles Turner contract. So we get to that, that'll be important.
Don't forget, I already talked about it.
Yes, Tony already talked about it on a Tuesday podcast. You know, he just did a quick little hit, so you should go listen to that as well. But I haven't gotten my take yet, so that's why I was hyping myself up. Let's do another overreaction. You want to go first again? You want me to do one?
You can go first this time.
All right. My overreaction is Bogdanović is going to lead the NBA in three-point percentage.
Oh, baby.
This season.
Dang, I was thinking about doing a 50-40-90 prediction for him for an overreaction.
Yeah, okay, maybe leading is because he will take such a high volume. But for his volume, I mean, whatever you can classify it, let's say he took three today, so let's say he takes 200. For a guy to take over 200 threes, he'll lead their percentage. That's maybe a more safe way to say it.
Yeah, he certainly has a good chance. He looked awesome tonight. Like, he was all over the place cutting. Like they had him last year, they had that pin dive set where every possession he starts and flies down the lane on a cut. He's the only guy who could score for them in that brutal first couple minute stretch we talked about. And I swear he just like has this sixth sense of like where the open space is going to be after an offensive rebound, and he darts to it. And he just gets so many open looks from that. That's so huge for the team. If he didn't turn it over three times, I would have said he was the best player on the team tonight.
Yeah, he killed Chandler Parsons. I almost made this, but I decided to go positive. Tony will overreact to Bojan killing Chandler Parsons. But I think Bojan was actually awesome. I mean, at first he was killing Parsons, but then they switched. They put Temple on for a little bit, and he was just killing anybody. I mean, he looks like a guy who played all summer and is still in playing shape. And the term of that, like, he didn't come out with any jitters. You know, all the other guys were kind of nervous. It was like a guy who's played a basketball game at least since last April, where everybody else has kind of not played any real basketball. Bojan has been playing with his international team for what, up until like late July, right? Early August.
Late August,
early September even. So right. he looked like a guy who like is just kind of continuing to play basketball all the time. You know, it amazes me how underrated he was. You know, before the vision got him, I was thinking of him like, oh, he's just like a 3-point specialist off the bench. But like, he's really athletic. He's like a sneaky, pretty athletic guy. Knows how to use his body when he gets in the lane to kind of create space to get layups. I mean, he can take contact. It's all these things where Bojan seem for like as a, when you don't watch him enough, you think he's like, you kind of have this myth about him almost, but he's actually a totally different player than when you actually watch him like day to day.
The myth that he's just a shooter should be shot into outer space.
Well, he's a white guy who makes a lot of threes. So like people think he's like more like Doug McDermott, where he's like not athletic, but Bogdanović is an athlete.
Okay, I mean, a quick interjection about the unathletic Doug McDermott. Holy moly, he got like feet above the rim on that dunk he had.
Yeah, but you know what I mean by the McDermott thing.
Oh, no, you're right. But he flew, dude. I couldn't believe it.
No, and it was a great play. I mean,
perfect cut.
Yeah. Well, and they faked the three to him almost, and he just caught the guy sleeping, and boom.
That was awesome. Yeah, great heads-up play. Yeah, you're right about Bojan. If he had lateral quickness, he'd literally have every direction of agility. I enjoyed Caitlin's humorous tweet about Bojan guarding Parsons. She said, a battle of no lateral movement. And then the bench guys were in, and it was Kyle Anderson versus Doug McDermott. She said, oh, good, another battle of no lateral movement. It was very funny to watch those matchups take place. They were just going right at each other, not being able to get past them. But Bojan could get past them because he is clever and crafty and can get to the rim, like you said. But, yeah, 50-40-90 might not be off the table for him. He's got the tools to do it. He just has to actually do it. He was really close on free throws last year, so that's the hardest part usually.
Yeah, I mean, what was he at last year free throw-wise? 80-something?
88, I want to say. 87. Let me pull it up.
Yeah, that sounds right. I mean –
last year he got the 2-point per. Oh, that, right. It's not 2-point percentage, which is stupider.
It should be. It really should be.
He was 50. He was 47, 40, and 87.
Yeah. So for him, it's the overall field goal percentage, which it's hard when you know So tonight, what, a third of his shots were three. So it's hard to get that because you're going to, he's going to shoot 40, let's say 1 or 2% from three, which is going to drag down his whole thing. But, you know, he was really good inside converting shots at the rim. And if he continued to get like easy little buckets up there, it's definitely doable.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's got a good shot. He just, like, it's hard to predict what level of option he's going to be for the team too. So it's hard to game plan for him. It'll be fun to watch how that goes.
Yeah. So what's your overreaction? Second one.
My final overreaction.
Okay. Let it be known, Tony, I wanted to do three of these and Tony couldn't come up with three. So,
okay. I struggle with coming up with like broad reactions.
Oh, I'm always ready for the random take and segment. Tell me to go.
That makes me a terrible journalist. Like when all these things come out, they're like, write about three takeaways you had. I'm like, I can't think of three things.
All right. Give me your last overreaction.
I'll try my best. I think the best lineup the Pacers have this season by the end of the year in terms of net rating is going to have three guards in it. And I think
Joseph, Evans, Oladipo.
I believe that is the three guards that are going to be in it, but I said three guards to be broad.
We already wrote Collison off, so that makes sense.
We wrote him down. He's not off.
You know what I mean. We overreacted him having a really bad game.
We did. The first time it was Turner Sabonis. They went with three guards with him. I think it was Vic, DC, Tyreek, and it went well. And then the second time it was Kojo, Vic, Tyreek, and it went well again. So the Vic, Tyreek, and another guard trio is just like frenetically great at guarding the perimeter. They're active hands. They force guys, you know, to the middle, to the bigs. It was really good, especially against a team that makes it easy to not switch. They were a great trio tonight, and I think that there's a chance that, you know, first of all, I think Tyreek and Vic are probably going to be in the best net rating lineup anyway. But I think another guard makes a lot of sense there, and that'll end up being one of the best Pacers groups when the year's said and done.
Yeah, and I was super impressed with Tyreek's passing.
His passing is amazing. He just somehow, like, he drives, and I'm like, oh, crap, he's going to get blocked or fouled at the last second. He just dumps it off right to the guy right next to him.
You have Lance-itis.
I know.
You do. I mean, you know, if you look from really far away, he's about the same height as Lance. Lance is 6'6", too, I think, as well. Maybe he's Lance 6'5". They're the same height. They're playing with the same unit last year. You would think, he doesn't quite dribble like Lance. Lance has that, like, up and, like, more pounding the ball than Evans does. Evans is kind of, like, a more slow it down. But from, like, afar, you think, oh, that's Lance there. And then it's like, that guy made up, like, he had one pass where did he hit Sabonis where he like drove into the lane, two guys collapsed on him, and he just kind of like last thing just kind of dished it into Sabonis, who just slammed it in. Like, that's the kind of pass the Pacers were missing last year from their guard off the bench.
Team leader in assist tonight. And yeah, you know, when it's funny is when you said Lance-itis, I was thinking, like, you know, they had that 3-on-1 fast break that you just talked about where Evans gave it to Sabonis. Lance just takes the shot, like, regardless of if it's going in, and like maybe Sabonis cleans up the mess anyway, but Tyreek makes the play that they score on 100% of the time. And I'm just, it's so relieving to see it happen. Another good one for Tyreek could be that he leads the league in assisted turnover, because he's really smooth with the ball. He plays at his own speed, and this team sets him up really well to like be a passer. So I think that's certainly possible.
Yeah. So here's the thing. He probably could be their starting point guard. But the problem is you want a guy to lead your bench in the same sense. Like, you want the Chris Paul kind of James Harden thing, sort of. You want kind of that. So it's like this pull of which way do you want to go? Do you want him just – do you want to keep him on the bench because he can carry your bench unit, which, I mean, that's really one part of this game that I was on there. I mean, they got four of their bench guys were plus – well, I guess Dad played with the bench too. So, really, all their guys that played with the bench unit were all plus 20s.
Right.
So, I mean, that was clearly the unit that kind of carried them. So, it's a pull, but the fact that they were able to get Tyreek Evans, that nobody else wanted him, that somehow Indiana was able to bring in a free agent like him of his caliber and to not even be a starter, it's just awesome. I mean, it's just like an awesome thing. It really shows, you know, we talked about how they didn't land a big fish in the free agency with all the cap space they had, but they land. But that's what having on that space helped. It helped get a guy like Tyreek Evans who can just be a game changer.
Exactly. And he showed game one he can be a game changer. So I look forward to watching a lot of Tyreek Evans. The fit is great. And Adam, can we make a sad thing? Can we say a sad thing?
Sure, say it.
The steal streak is over.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
64 games for Vic's steal streak gone.
Man, you know what? He did not have a great night. He wasn't terrible. I wouldn't say he was like
he's fine.
He was just
low key 16 points.
But it also reminded me of a kind of game when they blow teams out. Vic is never the guy that has. You know what I mean?
He shot well. He stunk in the first half, though. So
no, but there were a lot of games last year where they played. Like, I remember there's a Knicks game where they won by like 40. Vic had like 19 points. Like he doesn't show up in the games where they blow teams out. He shows up in the game where everybody else is struggling, and he just carries them to a win. That's when you noticeable him. He's pretty noticeable.
Perhaps it was just me focusing on it, but like I think he knew when his last rotation in the game would be. And he was like jumping when passes would come kind of close.
I did notice that slide where he jumped a couple of times that were just terrible jumps. Like
he had no chance at him. He just wanted the steal. I was like, yeah, Vic, get it. And then he never got it. He was close a few times. So the steal streak is over. So I like the joke people were tweeting at me. They said he's just resetting to get 81 the rest of the year. So
it's probably pretty good that it's over. That way he doesn't have to do what he did today.
He can play serious defense.
Yeah, and I think Milwaukee's game is going to have a big game just because it's going to be closer and he's going to have to be relied on more. This game, they didn't rely on him as much. They didn't need him to. Everybody else was playing so well. It's like, I guess it's probably fair to say there were games where Bojan would have games and Vic wouldn't because they would just let Bojan carry the offense.
Right.
So it felt like that kind of game.
And if Vic can get carried by the bench and he can be ready to go for the playoffs, that'd be sweet too.
Yes, that would be amazing. Let's talk about your attention. Yeah. You want to take a quick break and then talk about Miles Turner's contract?
I would love to.
All right. To end today's Locked On Pacers podcast, we're going to talk about the dumbfounding, or I would say confusing, 4-year, $80 million contract Miles Turner got. I would have put the odds of him signing an extension back in, what did we do? We did a podcast in July talking about it, I think, before free agency at like, what, 10%? 20%? Because on one side, Miles Turner has the ability to make a huge amount of money if he has a great year. If he was like an all-star, he'd get 5 years in the 120, 130 range, if not more. And worst case scenario, he was going to get a 4-year, 60, 70 million from some team, right? I mean, like that was probably his floor. And, you know, he was probably looking at a contract in the range of Clint Capella at 5 years, 90. Like that's probably what his kind of, maybe his floor is even going to be if he had a decent year. So I was just surprised he signed it, to be honest.
Yeah, I am not surprised he signed it. At all, really. I didn't think that the Pacers would offer this much. It's $18 million flat a year, I learned since I last talked about it.
Though it's Clint Capella deal one last year, basically.
Clint Capella signed the same deal like a couple months ago.
I thought he signed 5 years, 90. It was his 5 years, I'm pretty sure.
Was it five? No, you cannot sign a 5-year rookie extension, so it's not five.
Yes, you can. But in a draft, no, yes, you can.
You cannot sign a 5-year extension. You can sign. Oh, he's a restricted free agent. It was a different.
Yeah, it wasn't a pre one. It
wasn't an extension. That's right. It was 5 years.
Okay. Thanks, Tony, for coming to where I was finally.
I thought it was an extension for some reason.
He's a restricted free agent.
You know, and I think that if, as Turner had shown us so far in his career, that the 18 mil would be an overpay. So I think the Pacers are gambling on him getting better, which is a risky move for contract extensions. But it wouldn't even be such an egregious overpay that it's not worth it to just lock him up. And obviously it's great to have him back. He's clearly a very good and impactful player. So it's fine. I've already talked about it a lot. And I think that the worst part, honestly, is the $7 million of cap space it sucks up next summer. But then again, spending $7 million of cap space to potentially save a bunch, if he improves a ton and would have gotten a lot more, might be worth it. So,
yeah, I mean,
They're taking a gamble there, and that is what it is. I think it's probably the right move, and I think it's interesting that Turner accepted it too.
So I think today, if he was a free agent on the market, he'd be worth about 15 a year.
I agree.
So you're basically overpaying about $3 million, but you're betting on an improvement. You've seen him put in the effort to improve. You know what I mean?
He earned it, which is big.
Yeah, the only reason I see Turner sign this contract is as an insurance policy in some sense, where he's only 22 years old. So even if, you know, obviously he could have made 120, right? So he's leaving $40 million on the table. Let's say that's like probably his max. If he had a great year, it was 120, 130, I think. I know his max maybe 150, but I think that was like an ideal range is 120 in my mind. But he's probably thinking, listen, this is like insurance policy. If I get hurt this season, I might lose all that money. And he hasn't made a ton of money. He's made about probably 10 to 15 million on the rookie deal. by now. So it's, I mean, it's a lot of money, but in the grand scheme of things of NBA players, it's really not. And this is like a secure thing where in 4 years, and if he really becomes an all-star, he'll get the 5 years, whatever deal. Actually, he'll probably, he can become an all-NBA player, qualify for a D&E extension in 4 or 5 years. So he'll be 27 still. So he'll have another contract in at least maybe at nine figures. And with the cap it is, who the hell knows how much he'll be able to make. So I see why he took it in the sense that, like, it's an insurance policy that, like, even if he gets hurt, his family's set for life.
Exactly. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense for him in that way. And, you know, I just, like, I don't know. It's just always risky betting on guys to improve. I think he will. I really do. So I shouldn't be so trepid. That's the only reason I would not have done it as the team is it's just, like, the chances that you actually get, like, a home run out of this are so low. Like, you might get a little bit of a bargain, but you're not going to get a home run of it are so low compared to the chance that it's not worth it, which, it is worth it to have him, but not worth it in terms of, like, he's not actually an $18 million player. I think it's higher than the chance that it's a home run. So that's why I wouldn't have done it as a team, but I think it's fine. And that alone is fine. And it helps them plan for the future knowing they have him locked up and they know his cap figure and things like that, which is good, too.
Yeah, it's not as bad as the Andrew Wiggins deal where they basically paid a guy what he could be. And they paid him a full max, which is 5 years, 150 or 140 at the time. It's better than that. You know, I guess I see the reasoning behind it because the $3 million stays worth 15 right now is the Indiana tax to stay in Indiana, you know.
Right.
You know, yes, free agents. and if we're being really honest, it locks him up at a reasonable deal. And if he has a good year along with the bonus, it makes him kind of a trade, an asset, a valuable trade asset as a guy who's locked up for 4 years on a, you know, a flat, you know, which you know. And if he basically
Turner as a result of signing this has a no trade clause this season.
But just this season or
for just this one season.
So but like they can trade him next. I mean, right, they're probably going to do a full year of Sabonis and Turner to figure what they like.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's why it gives them next summer flexibility. Like, okay, well, we like Sabonis, so they like Sabonis better. And they want to say, we can trade Turner for a small forward. Let's do it. I mean, not that they're going to do it. I think he's going to have a good enough year that it will be like, it'll be worth about what he's making anyways. So that it won't matter. But there's always that out there.
Yeah, for sure. And they have time with Sabonis. They still have two more years of his rookie deal to figure it all out. So it'll be fine. And I, fine is the perfect word for it because obviously I think Miles Turner is a very good basketball player and I'm excited to have him. And it's just a risk that I personally would not have taken. That probably says more about me than the deal.
So you want something that's really insane?
Yeah, I would love insane things.
So he'll make $2 million more per year than Jan Mahimi got in his contract.
Holy moly.
Like
that's gross. That's disgusting.
Yeah, it is.
Crazy. I saw this. Miller Time tweeted this, and it got me thinking about it. Like, John Wall alone is going to make more than Turner and Oladipo combined.
Yeah, and if
that's crazy.
And it's sort of like if you think about it, if the Pacers hit on this, like Turner becomes an all-star, they then have two all-stars on way below value contracts,
right,
which leaves them enough space to get another all-star.
Yeah, I think this deal says a lot about like the chances Turner even thinks he becomes a superstar.
Well, you know what? I think it's like it's the security at this point. It's like I'm going to secure $80 million or $72 million, whatever, for today. And if I become an all-star when I'm 27, I will still make $200 million.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and it's not like this contract is his last contract. He's going to get another big deal eventually. So if he becomes an all-star, yeah, he'll be underpaid for a few years, but ultimately make it back when he signs, especially if he's like – an all-NBA player. Like I said, I'll get the DNA from Indiana because by that point, Vic will be in his 30s and Turner will be the cornerstone and it'll be in a weird phase where they'll want to give him the deal to keep him forever.
Yeah, that's true. What do you think the incentives are? $2 million a year, every year of the deal. I don't have a clue. I'm guessing games played because he has two seasons of 65 or less games, so maybe they want to
Bet health. Games played... maybe a some kind of stat in terms of defense, but maybe not.
Clint Capella has rebound percentage is one of his, which is
tough. I wonder if that or I was thinking like an all defense or all second team defense award or
NBA award.
I think you know the way he played today, he could be a candidate for second team all defense.
Yeah, he definitely could be.
So I mean, and you know, if he turns into Gobert, he won't be as good as Gobert, but if he turns into like the second best defender center in the league, this kind of be worth it every day.
Oh, absolutely.
And I guess also part of it might be they convinced by doing this, they could have also convinced Turner to take a little less or take the deal because they want to re-sign Sabonis next summer. And if he has a good year, they said, okay, we can afford two centers at $35 million, but not two centers at $50 million.
Right, right, right.
So that's also that part of this whole thing. You know, and Turner seems like a team player in some sense, an Indiana guy. They like Sabonis. They met a bunch this summer. So there's that whole part of it too. And, you know, it's kind of a also showing your players that you reward success. You know, a guy who's played well, we give you the money. Like we're not.
Yeah, they've shown that time after time, which is great.
Yeah. And it's a good sign to the rest of the league. And really this whole thing too, is about being able to keep Vic in two seasons.
Yep. Yes, it is.
And we have Turner there who likes him. It shows signs that, look, we're going to keep our guys. We're going to keep enough flat cap flexibility to improve the team at times, but we're going to build around you and Turner and Sabonis and other guys.
Yep, I agree. And I think, again, I think the perfect word for me is it's fine. And I think it will ultimately be fine.
I will agree with you. Anything you're writing for 8.9 seconds or West Indianapolis Community News?
Finally out of the off-season content game, which is very, very exciting. Yeah, we got grades coming up at 8.9 seconds for every game. Be on the lookout for those player grades. They're always fun and goofy. Will Ferg gave everybody an A for their first game because they all came prepared and played well, which
not Collison.
No, he gave Collison an A because he played really nice defense. He didn't like that wasn't their serious, like they just all deserve an A grade. He said the whole team played well in the first game, they'll deserve it.
What a sucker.
Will's creative though.
I know. I just said that I would love to have him as a teacher then.
Yeah.
show up to class for 10 days in a row. Yeah, you get an A.
Yeah, and then yep, for the paper, game recaps and early season anecdotes, probably about McMillan and the rebounding thing will be in that story, which will be fun. If you're in the area, then it'll be there.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. You can always follow Tony at T East NBA, me at FriedmanAdam5, or our podcast at Locked On Pacers. Feel free to tweet at us whenever you want to leave a comment, concern, whatever. We respond to a lot of tweets. We like the Twitter interactions. It makes us feel like we're getting some value out of this podcast sometimes. You know, it helps to know the audience is interested and they want to engage us. It's always fun. As always, you can leave us reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or via podcast. Leave us 5-star reviews. We do read those occasionally, eventually. There were some funny ones, so Tony definitely reads some. Tony will send some screenshots to me of some of them sometimes. So they're definitely funny. And we you know, the more creative, the better, as I like to say. That's all for this Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, we'll be back again on Friday with a preview for the Bucks game with me. And we'll probably break a little bit more down to this Memphis Grizzlies game. And Tony will be back again either Monday or Tuesday on next week.